The playing field we're trying to level up is one that's been promised by these blockchains we're all using and building primitives on, like Ethereum. And at the moment, you have to make this trade-off as a user. So if you want to use one of these new primitives on Ethereum, you have to pay the price of using one of these public ledgers. And the reason for that is that you pay the price of every transaction having to be public.
Hey, welcome to the show. I'm DeFi Dad from Fourth Revolution Capital. Today, we're going to talk about a topic that I think continually gets placed on the back burner in crypto, which is privacy. Over the years, the transparency of being able to track all transactions on chain with a blockchain like Ethereum has come at a cost, and that cost is privacy. So once a wallet is doxed to an entity like an exchange, all of their subsequent activity in that wallet and in wallets interacting with that wallet is potentially revealed to a centralized entity. What's worrisome about this is that when a centralized entity mishandles that sensitive information, it can potentially have consequences. And so we think about corrupt institutions, regulators, and so forth, potentially having access to that information now and in the future. For me, the real promise of DeFi as a better alternative to traditional finance means inheriting privacy as a right. Privacy or encryption shouldn't be considered taboo to talk about. It doesn't insinuate we mean to do unethical or even criminal things by demanding privacy as a right. Crypto, specifically DeFi, has a real opportunity to deliver a privacy-preserving UX, but it's simply taken time and lots of cutting-edge research, which we're going to talk about today. So I'm privileged here to be joined by Joe Andrews, who is the co-founder of Aztec Protocol. Aztec is an encrypted blockchain secured by Ethereum, ensuring DeFi transactions and crypto payments in general remain private while retaining what is auditability and compliance. In the last year, Aztec released what's known as ZK.money, ZK referring to zero knowledge tech, which is a topic that is being discussed even in the depths of TikTok. And so we'll talk about what exactly that means today. Aztec previously raised money from the renowned team at Paradigm and more recently raised a $100 million round led by A16Z. I'm also honored to have been an angel and invested in the team. I've actually known the team prior to them having pivoted into what is Aztec. So it's been a real journey to watch them grow over the years. And on that note, Joe, thank you again for making time to join me. How are you doing? Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to do one of these, and I hope we can to avoid the pun, but uncloak some of the mysteries behind on-chain privacy and encryption and kind of make it more appealing to mainstream so people can learn more about what we're up to. So excited to dive in here.
Yeah, I feel like the main purpose behind privacy preserving tech in crypto has been to wax poetic about the importance of privacy over the years. So, you all are one of the few trailblazers in this space. And, again, very proud to share, your story and all the progress you've made here in the last few years. But before we talk more about Aztec, do you want to briefly share, what were you doing before you got into crypto? And then I'd love to talk a little bit about, what were you initially working on before Aztec really became, the mission at hand?
Yeah, it's a great question, actually. So I've kind of been in and around the crypto space for a long time, 2013, 2014, but I wasn't actually involved in it and wasn't developing anything, wasn't purchasing any crypto. I actually was in San Francisco in 2013, 2014, and was fortunate enough to go to a meetup on the original Ethereum ICO roadshow in a place called the Negev in 6th and Mission in San Francisco, which was kind of like a tech hacker house back then. So I had followed it, and I think back then, I haven't shared this story much, but I think you could purchase about $1,000 of ETH in the original pre-ICO if you transferred some money on Western Union and got an original Ethereum client. I obviously didn't do that because the place I was staying was not very nice, and the people who came to give the talk, Vitalik and Gavin, were sleeping on the sofa. So I thought these people look semi-homeless, and if you give $1,000 to every homeless person, you don't end up in a good place. But anyway, so since then, I've always kind of like followed it, and I guess thought what could have been, and was actually doing something in food tech in the US. So I was doing kind of healthy food delivery, and I was kind of building consumer app around that and some of the logistical routing tech. But I stayed close to kind of crypto and followed like kind of Bitcoin and just was watching Ethereum maybe from the side. And then that startup imploded in 2017, and I moved back to the UK and did this program called Entrepreneur First, where I met the rest of the Aztec team. And they were kind of very kind of technical and more clued up on Ethereum than me. And I was like, okay, well, I've been in and around the space for several years now. It's time to kind of dive in and try and build something useful here. So it was a very different way into it, I would say, but it got me here. And I think what attracts me to the space is it's a disruptive technology. So I like disruptive technologies that kind of either seek to level the playing field or just improve people's kind of quality of life. And that may not apply to us as kind of UK people or Americans. Ultimately, it's like you think more broader than that, like how do we level the financial kind of playing field? And that's what really excites me to this kind of technology.
So with Aztec, what playing field is it that you're trying to level? I guess what is the problem that you're all trying to solve for?
Yeah, so I guess the playing field we're trying to level up is one that's been promised by these blockchains we're all using and building primitives on, like Ethereum. And at the moment, you have to make this trade-off as a user. So if you want to use one of these new primitives on Ethereum that you may not have access to in kind of like a third world country or kind of Asia or some other places where you don't have readily access to financial instruments like we may do in kind of our Western economies, you have to pay the price of using one of these public ledgers. And the reason for that is that in order for a public blockchain to have this global settlement layer and kind of shared consensus, you pay the price of every transaction having to be public. It's how these validators work. And in order for them to be able to validate a transaction and test if another validator is lying or telling the truth, the transaction, its contents need to be public. So simply what that means is if I pay you one ETH, $10, $1,000, you can see my wallet, your wallet, the transaction amount, but it doesn't stop there. You can then actually see all future transactions I'm going to do and all future transactions you're going to do, which is just kind of a non-starter if we compare that to the world we have in like a kind of more traditional Web2 financial kind of economy. And when I say kind of like, I guess, leveling the playing field, if we're going to onboard hundreds of millions of new users to kind of new payment rails, new kind of banking rails, I think we have a responsibility to at least give them the level of privacy that we've come to enjoy in our daily lives, and not some kind of nation state surveillance style system where every current or future transaction can be tracked. So yeah, that's kind of the high level what drives me anyway. And yeah, it's been a long journey to try and make some inroads into that. Yeah, as you say, starting kind of before 4.5 years now, almost.
The current banking experience, as much as I could beat up on it and wax poetic about how important DeFi is and all the improvements that can be made with decentralized finance, you know, the truth is that there is a greater level of privacy inherited through that banking system. And the problem today is that in crypto, even if you are someone like me who's doing 99% of transactions on chain, the minute that I on-ramp or off-ramp fiat, I am exposing myself to some entity. So that information is now out there. And it's in my opinion, not too different from, again, the banking system, where at least my bank knows everything about, you know, my own personal transactions. But in Ethereum, or if you're using any sort of L2 right now, the default is that all of that is public on the ledger. And I think, as you pointed out, and I mean to like really emphasize this for those who are especially new to this space, if you tag a wallet with an ENS, an Ethereum name service like domain, I mean, that's it. Like, once you have that in there, something that identifies you, especially if you use like your real name, every transaction in the future in that wallet, you know, can obviously be tracked back to that ENS if you continue to hold it. And even if you got rid of it, it's still there forever in the history of that wallet. And then every transaction that you send to another wallet, that, you know, there are ways to sort of distinguish that, okay, money was sent to a new wallet. This is clearly the same sort of like behaviors in this new wallet. So it's probably the same person. And so that's been a problem. It's a bad UX is what it is. And that's why we're excited about, you know, what you're all building with Aztec. Okay. So the underlying tech, there's a lot you could go into the weeds about here, but I really want to try to dumb this down for folks. Do you think that we should start with something like what is zero knowledge technology that sort of underpins all of this? If you can kind of walk us through like the Legos or building blocks of research and technology that underpin Aztec network.
Yeah, I think so zero knowledge proofs get a lot of confusion even in the L2 space, because they have two properties. They have a property of kind of compressing computation, and other L2s use this to kind of scale Ethereum and make transactions cheaper. And then they have this other, we think, far more interesting property, enable encryption or hiding of information. So we kind of leverage both of those properties to kind of both make Ethereum cheaper, but also allow the user to encrypt information. And I think instead of getting into the weeds of like how a zero knowledge proof works, I think to think about like what it can do is really important. And all it really is a form of encryption. So if you kind of look at like services that you may use on your phone, like Signal or Telegram or WhatsApp, they now all have end-to-end encrypted messaging. And that's not using zero knowledge proofs, but it's using kind of some form of public key cryptography to encrypt messages for a given recipient. What we enable in Aztec and what we use zero knowledge proofs for is we're now encrypting payments for a given recipient, and that recipient could be a person or it could be a DeFi protocol on Aztec. And all the zero knowledge proof does is it proves that encryption has been done correctly, so a blockchain can validate it. So if you think about the earlier example, like where a validator needs to be able to test everything to see if people are double spending, it's not enough just to encrypt something and say, here's the value. We still need the blockchain to say this is the correct record of events. So a zero knowledge proof basically gives a way for us to encrypt something, a payment for another user, but still have a blockchain attest that this transaction is correct. So we effectively reveal just enough information so the blockchain can still kind of validate the transaction, but no discerning information to actually leak information about who the parties were, what the amounts were, kind of the history that we're kind of leaking in public transactions. So that's kind of my best take on how we use this zero knowledge technology. And if you're kind of interested in the tech, Vitalik has some great blog posts on kind of ZK SNARKs and how they work, which are probably the best resource to dive in further for the listeners.
Yeah, let's talk about the end result of all of this, the benefits of what user experience we end up with in terms of crypto payments and DeFi. I can speak to this very briefly just because part of the reason I ever got the chance to invest in Aztec is I've been a power user of it. It is an application that, without like revealing too much, I think I have to use it at least once a week. Sometimes I'm using it daily. It's very important to me in terms of having the assurances of being able to transact on an encrypted network. So if you've ever used any ZK rollup, if you happen to use, let's say, something like ZK Sync,
the experience is very similar. So I might deposit ETH or DAI into what I think we could appropriately call like my Aztec account, but it's a wallet. It's a wallet that I control then on the Aztec network. Once I have my ETH or DAI on the network, I am able then to send private payments. So I could technically send it to any wallet from there, and I'll let you speak to, like, I guess, like the assurances of how private that actually is once it's on the Aztec network or L2. And then let's talk a bit too about the ability to access DeFi through Aztec Connect integrated applications like Aave, Lido, and Curve. But Joe, yeah, what can you add to that in terms of the payment side? Like this was a very fundamental use case that you all launched with. You know, it means that like if I kept money on Aztec, I could easily, you know, if I wanted to send you for, you know, pennies per transaction, that hey, here's some DAI. Thanks for getting me a beer or pizza. But that's a really basic use case versus the really powerful, I think, integrations with DeFi.
Yeah, I think I can add a few things. So I guess the app we built, ZK Money, is really a showcase of our SDK. And what we're trying to focus on now is getting other people to build even cooler interfaces to harness these capabilities. But what those capabilities are, you're quite right. It's kind of at the base level payments, and we kind of added payments as the first feature because for the first time you could now do a payment transaction for cheaper than a normal Ethereum transaction, but it was end to end encrypted, which is kind of a bit of a watershed moment. Like usually for the last 10 years on the blockchain almost, privacy has had a kind of a UX trade-off. So if you wanted to have a private payment on a blockchain, you had to use a completely different blockchain where there wasn't kind of many users, or you had to wait days or weeks or send fixed amounts. And there was this UX trade-off always. So we were very excited to kind of put payments out there because for the first time, yeah, it was this kind of this leveling kind of factor of I could now pay you. And it was cheaper, but also you got kind of encryption privacy for free, which I think was really exciting. And then the second part is that now everything's kind of private. Like you can now move away from kind of addresses and kind of pseudo-anonymous identities that we're used to on Ethereum with kind of 0xA, BCD, whatever, to actually having human-readable names, because a bit like ENS... but you can have this account abstraction where I can look up your alias, DeFi Dad, if it's the one you've got, but I don't know anything about your balance, so I can pay you very easily, but I don't learn anything about you, which is similar to a Venmo style experience that those in the US are probably pretty used to. And I think crypto being able to offer that without there being a centralized part in the middle was pretty groundbreaking, and we're excited for the applications that can kind of be built just around that use case. In terms of the privacy, you can see when you are moving funds into the network as a whole, but once funds are in there, that they're end-to-end encrypted. So if you do payments inside the network, it's kind of as strong as encryption as SSL. It's very strong encryption. So payments between wallets on the asset network, there's no way to link them. When you kind of move funds out of the network, the privacy is still pretty strong, but it's not quite as strong because you can see the amount. So you have to be a bit careful about kind of like identifying amounts. So if you have a lot of decimal places or kind of amounts that have not been used very frequently, it can be revealing, especially if you do that in a kind of predictable pattern. But if you stick to kind of the amounts we recommend, it's very private. And then the other functionality, which we launched in July of this year, Aztec Connect kind of takes things kind of in a kind of much more interesting dimension. We were kind of looking at the payments use case and we were like, hey, these are great. There's loads of big payments companies that can be built on this network, but
people are so excited about DeFi. We had kind of the DeFi summer, and all these DeFi applications were being built, and the Aztec couldn't support them because it was kind of this different execution environment on the L2. So we designed Aztec Connect as a way to effectively withdraw your funds to a DeFi protocol, perform the DeFi operation as if you were the Aztec roll-up, and then bring funds back. And that's very powerful because it's kind of like this VPN for Ethereum, where I think about it a bit like a puppet. Like, you have this puppet with kind of strings, and like the puppet can kind of, you can control it as an Aztec user to go and do a Uniswap trade or do a Curve Lido kind of swap. And you get really strong privacy doing that because you could be anyone inside the Aztec network doing the transaction. And furthermore, we can also batch like transactions together. So we get this scaling benefit as well, which we're starting to see really take off on ZK Money. I think when we first started, we were kind of doing a Lido transaction maybe once a day. I think now they're kind of happening in batches every 1 to 2 hours, and those batches are full. So it's kind of this flywheel effect of kind of users subsidizing transactions for other users, which is really cool. So yeah, the functionality and the feature set's grown from kind of payments to now really a gateway to layer one Ethereum applications that you can now access privately from your Aztec wallet.
So to back up to payments for a moment, if you are listening to this podcast in 2023 and you're newer to crypto, you need to understand that previously privacy was assumed to be a benefit that you could only access by using a different blockchain than Ethereum, that Ethereum would not be a blockchain where you could basically transact in a private way. And so you would hop over to something like Monero. But a lot of the drawbacks that I think we even called out in terms of getting in and getting out, and that being ultimately a connecting point to an entity or something that reveals your identity, like that problem in the UX still existed. So the fact that you can continue to benefit from the security and the decentralization of Ethereum while accessing encrypted payments, is that's really powerful. So not something to glaze over. I love the way you explain the puppet with ZK.money. If you go to ZK.money and you look at the earn tab, there's these different applications. Many of them are very familiar names in DeFi, like, again, Lido and Aave. And what you're doing then is, once you deposit into Aztec and you're using ZK.money, you're using or accessing those applications, it's like you have a puppet. Once the money goes in, it's kind of in this, I want to call it like an encrypted black box. And what goes on in that black box, obviously at this point, is limited to the applications that are supported by Aztec Connect or ZK.money, however you want to frame that. And once you've got your money in there, then technically I could be hopping between those DeFi applications. So the limiting factor today is just, you know, Aztec continuing to, I guess, test, grow, and add new applications. So Joe, can you explain what actually happens on the back end when I, as a ZK.money user, access one of the applications? I am, let's say, depositing ETH for staked ETH, STETH by Lido. Like, that ultimately is going to Ethereum mainnet, right? And I guess, how does that all happen?
Yeah, so I guess most of the actual logic happens in something called the Aztec SDK. So the Aztec SDK is the thing that's doing all the encryption for you on the client. It's effectively your wallet. It's able to create transactions, create proofs of transactions, and decrypt stuff. And all ZK Money is a pretty kind of like example UI for that SDK. So we actually have lots of developers building other applications through our SDK, which should come live this quarter. But to get back to the question, so what happens is you click the button on ZK Money to deposit, let's say, one ETH to get some. It's actually wrapped staked ETH, which is it's just a non-rebasing version of staked ETH because it's easier to do the accounting. But you press a button and you kind of select to send some of your ZK ETH at this point, so your shielded ETH inside the system. Instead of sending it to another user, you're electing to send it to an L1 contract. So you create this transaction, which kind of is signed by your Aztec wallet, that transaction gets sent to an Aztec node, our sequencer, and it's bundled together with, I think at the moment, up to about 50 other users. Here, the users are just providing gas savings, not further privacy. The privacy is kind of already there. But once there are 50 kind of users doing the same transaction, so trying to swap their ETH to wrapped staked ETH, the sequencer will kind of bundle those into a roll-up proof, and it will aggregate them all together and send a roll-up with all other transactions to our roll-up contract on Ethereum mainnet. And then when the roll-up contract on Ethereum mainnet gets this, it's going to see, okay, maybe there's 15 ETH total that wants to be swapped for Lido to get wrapped staked ETH back. And it's going to go through kind of all the transactions it has, and it's going to come to a DeFi batch. And it's then a bit like the puppet we talked about earlier. It's going to actually execute out, call what we call an Aztec Connect bridge contract. It's going to send the ETH to that contract, which will in turn kind of deposit into Lido and bring back wrapped staked ETH. So that all happens atomically in one transaction as part of this giant roll-up transaction. And it's kind of quite fun to watch. Like if you go to Etherscan and you click on kind of one of our roll-up blocks, which you can see, you just see kind of this mega Ethereum transaction, which has all these DeFi kind of protocols attached to it. So yeah, that's kind of at a high level what happens. The kind of roll-up contract will reach out to Lido and it will bring back roughly 15 wrapped staked ETH, and depending on kind of the exchange rate at the time. And it will then distribute that pro rata to the users who took part. We don't know who those users were. They could be anyone in Aztec, but that happens kind of automatically in the roll-up contract. And then once that transaction is settled, you as a user would kind of log into ZK Money and you would see kind of your ETH balance had gone down by one ETH and your wrapped staked ETH would now be available. And that wrapped staked ETH could be used for anything. You could send it to me as a payment transaction. You could withdraw it back to kind of Ethereum mainnet, or you could use it in other DeFi transactions. So we have that kind of composability within the system to be able to call other Aztec Connect contracts, which is really cool.
With over 170 million TVL cross-chain, the multi-chain liquid staking protocol Stator Labs is just about to launch the ETH liquid staking token ETHX. ETHX will give you the best of decentralized staking and DeFi yields. What's more is that anyone can permissionlessly run an ETHX node with just a 4 ETH bond. To get more alpha on the ETHX launch, go to statorlabs.com/Ethereum. So Joe, what do you envision the user experience to look like once Aztec Connect SDK is being built with by other DeFi applications? Like, would I potentially access a DeFi app and have like a drop down with the different L2s and networks, and I would like choose Aztec, and now that's like almost like another L2 option, but in this case it being a more like privacy preserving option?
Yeah, that's what we're striving for. So we're kind of hard at work making our SDK kind of compatible with Wallet Connect. So yeah, once there's applications that have kind of integrated the SDK, you should get a Wallet Connect modal. It would filter for kind of Aztec only wallets. Aztec wallets have, like, they need to do additional things to kind of Ethereum wallets because they have to do all this encryption. But yeah, you'll be able to go to a dApp. Like at the moment, we're working with Liquity to get a borrowing application. You'll be able to go to a version of that, select your Aztec wallet, and yeah, use it like a kind of similar flow to how you would use an Ethereum dApp. And that's kind of where we want to get to with Aztec Connect. We have a few people building really cool multi-sig wallets and kind of interesting kind of applications like dollar cost averaging bridges with mean finance. And then like fast forward kind of 9-12 months, we're working on a big upgrade to the network itself, which we're calling Aztec 3. So at the moment, you can't deploy programs to the Aztec network. There are some programs there, but the Aztec team wrote those programs. So there's a payment program, there's an account program, and there's a DeFi program, which kind of enables all the functionality that you can see in ZK Money today and in our SDK. What the kind of future upgrade with Aztec 3 enables is a developer to write their own program using something called Noir. So once you have that, there'll be kind of a much broader set of things you can do that's not limited to just kind of existing layer one protocols. You'll be able to have kind of new protocols that require privacy at their core, things like games, ZK games, those sorts of things, personal consumer finance, like under collateralized lending, those sorts of things where you actually need my financial history to do stuff, which we're really excited about. So yeah, short term, we're trying to hone in on a more familiar developer experience with kind of a wallet and applications rather than kind of ZK Money doing everything. And then like longer term, making a switch to developers kind of writing their own programs on the Aztec network itself.
Okay, so I definitely saved one of the like harder questions, the like elephant in the room type questions for last. How are you all thinking as founders and builders in this space since the aftermath, I would say, of Tornado Cash being sanctioned by the U.S. Treasury? For those that are behind on this news, it was very unexpected because they essentially deemed code to be like an entity that, you know, you're not allowed to engage with. And I'm not a legal expert, but it's been obviously a setback to all of us who, you know, want a maximally decentralized, permissionless world where, you know, anybody has access to the same tools so that there's a level playing field. I would actually compare what happened with Tornado Cash to, imagine you created a park and this is a public good. Now anybody can go to the park and enjoy the park. And that public park that is in the middle of a city suddenly has crime that happens in it on a single day, or maybe even more continually it's happening. And now those who created the park as a public good with great intention, where the majority of activity in that park is, you know, for good intention, Now those people are being held liable for the criminals that happen to have accessed it. I think it's like a very dark path to go down to think that if a criminal accesses or uses anything, that should, you know, be banned. And I mean, I could take it to an extreme and just, you know, point out the fact that criminals love to use banks. They absolutely love using the banking system, but those banks have paid billions and billions in terms of penalties and fees over the years. So on that note, how do you and the Aztec team think about the realities of building encryption, you know, for all through Aztec?
Yeah, it's a great question. And things have definitely changed. I think there's a few core tenets that we live by, which is the protocol itself is similar to kind of previous internet protocols, which have transformed the world we live in. So HTTPS like enables card payments and all of the things we kind of enjoy today in kind of Web2 banking. Kind of the same thing, there's encrypted versions of email, which have kind of unlocked huge things previously. And those are kind of uncensorable protocols. And the applications themselves become the area where regulation should be applied for a given country. So that's kind of one thing that we try and kind of stick true. Like the network itself shouldn't have regulation, and we're trying to create frameworks where apps can for given jurisdictions. And I guess the second thing that I think is one of the reasons why Tornado Cash was sanctioned, is that there was a lot of like good activity, but the numbers were very small. Like if you look on June Analytics, I think it's like under 30,000 kind of deposits, unique deposits from like Ethereum addresses, which is quite a small percentage of the kind of like US or global population. So we're focused on kind of increasing that kind of utility for positive use cases. So all of the DeFi applications that we have are all kind of, you can actually only transact with yourself. So by definition, it's a positive use case. We're working with our grants program on kind of areas for kind of donations to causes which may be kind of contentious in different countries. So whether that's kind of Planned Parenthood clinics or kind of different causes in the US where the act of doing a donation may need to be private, highlighting kind of good use cases that way, all the way through to kind of like working with kind of centralized exchanges to have direct on and off ramps to Aztec, which are all positive, kind of well understood businesses. I think the more of those that you have, you kind of begin to paint this other picture for kind of an encrypted future. And that's kind of what guides us. It's like we always think about these use cases as, okay, this is a great example of how encryption can be used for good. And that kind of, it does mean that there's still stress, obviously, when there's these kind of these nation state kind of level events. We have to be mindful not to go down that path, but we try to focus on the positive use cases for this. And that kind of has served us well so far, especially with the amount of kind of unique deposits in ZK Money and the applications we have there.
Yeah, well said. Well, Joe, let's end on this. What's next for Aztec? I think you alluded to Aztec V3, maybe? What's next on the roadmap? What can we look forward to in 2023?
Yeah, so the immediate term will be kind of moving some of the functionality of ZK Money into a dedicated Aztec wallet and encouraging other people to build Aztec wallets on the network. And that kind of unlocks all these different applications on kind of Aztec Connect and a much more familiar user experience to what users normally see on Ethereum, where you connect a wallet to a dApp. So that's pretty exciting. And then kind of towards the end of this year, we'll have a local kind of developer test network of Aztec 3, where people can start to experiment with their own programs deployed to a test version of the Aztec network. And behind the scenes, kind of, yeah, we're on a 12, 18 month journey to kind of fully decentralize the network as we launch Aztec 3. So it's going to be an exciting 2023. We've got a lot to build. But yeah, if you want to kind of see what encrypted blockchains can look like and the user experience that's possible, go to ZK Money and check it out. And if you're a developer, please head to our docs at docs.aztec.network and check out our SDK. We have lots of grants available for those who want to build cool things with encryption.
Awesome. Well, that's the call to action today. Yeah. Thanks so much, Joe. Appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today. And yeah, the call to action is be sure to check out zk.money and aztec.network. And of course, if you enjoyed this podcast, you can subscribe at defidad.com. So anyways, Joe, have a great day. And again, thanks for your time. Congrats on all the progress.